Dog Nation, and welcome to the Dog Nation offseason. It's the show where anything goes. I am Kaylee Mansell with my good friend and fellow Swiftie, Connor Riley. Connor, I can't exactly put my finger on what it is, but there's something different about you today. I don't know if you got a haircut or if you're just in like a generally better mood, but something's different.
I'll get it out of the way. It's the mustache. It's mustache mark. We're bringing it out. We're just trying things out here. You know, it's spring training. Guys cross train at different positions. You know, we're trying different facial hair looks. It won't be around for long after today, though. I can guarantee you that.
All right. Here's what we have coming up on the Dog Nation offseason today. With Nick Saban out of the limelight, Kirby Smart steps in as the undisputed current greatest coach in college football. How much separation is there between him and the next guy? That's what we're going to find out today. Then we're going to continue doing our position preview of the spring with the defensive line. And the last segment, guys, I don't want to spoil too much, but we've got something special in store for you, something that has never been done, as far as we know, in the history of Dog Nation. So make sure to stay tuned. You are not going to want to miss it. All right, let's go ahead and open it up with Kirby and the next best coach. Connor put out an excellent article about this on dognation.com. Kirby is now the precedent, and I feel like everybody else kind of groups in together. There's no clear number two. So when we were coming up with the list for who the prospects would be of the second best coach, I wanted the foundation to be they had to have been a head coach for at least 5 years and had a win percentage over 700. Connor, you've got Kirby and the guys that come after him. What is there anybody in your mind off the top of your head that you believe is the clear number two before we get into anyone?
I mean, that fit your parameters, no, because you look at Jim Harbaugh moving on. I think he would have fit in that. Nick Saban obviously moving on. That probably would have bumped Kirby Smart down to number two. It's tough, and you're going off of a lot of young and up-and-coming names. You know, Kirby Smart's not entering his ninth year. He's not exactly a young head coach anymore. So, you know, Ryan Day, yes, he's gotten Ohio State to a national title game, multiple playoff games, but he's also lost three straight to Michigan and inherited a wildly talented team from Ohio State. And Dan Lanning is someone who maybe 3-4 years from now, we look at it that way, but he's only entering his third season as a head coach. And you know, what's Dan Lanning's best win at this point? Utah this past season, 0-2 against Kalen DeBoer at Washington. I wouldn't surprise me if a year from now we're talking about Kalen DeBoer as a guy up there. You know, but I think Alabama is just a very different job than from where Washington had been. And obviously he has time at Fresno State, but I'm not all that interested in also counting his time at Sioux Falls at the D3 level. And then, you know, maybe you look at a guy like, say, a Dabo Swinney, who has won two national championships, but his best years, I think, are far behind him at this point, and he's shown a little bit of an unwillingness to adapt to a modern age. You know, maybe it's a guy like Steve Sarkisian, who did get Texas to a college football playoff a season ago, but it's a lot of unknowns. And so, you know, with that in mind, again, there were three current coaches that have won a national championship in college football: Kirby Smart, Dabo Swinney, and Mack Brown. And I think we all just about agree that Kirby Smart, from in comparison to those championship winning coaches, is far out in front of who might be that next best coach.
So I have to admit that guys like Dan Lanning and Kalen DeBoer are not on here. They did not meet the requirements for what I consider to be the guidelines. But let's go ahead and look at the guy here that set the precedent for everyone, the baseline. He's who everyone has to catch up with, and that is, of course, Coach Kirby Smart. You can see everything up there, but, I mean, I think the bottom is the most important stat of all. Set the SEC record for most wins through 100 games. He defeated Nick Saban in winning that. Now, Connor, let's do a little hypothetical here. What does Kirby have to do to take place as the greatest college football coach of all time, surpassing Nick Saban? We know he's the current, but what does he have to do to get up there at the top?
I think, obviously, you know, part of it is he's going to have to win at least 7 national championships, because that's what Nick Saban has done. However, you know, and this is going to be controversial to some people, I don't know if Kirby Smart's ever going to be able to surpass Nick Saban, because of the fact that there was, in my mind, significant overlap between the two as head coaches. And Nick Saban went 5-1 against Kirby Smart. And yes, you can say maybe early on Nick had some more talented teams, but when they met in the 2021 SEC championship game, I think Georgia was the more talented team, and Alabama won that game convincingly. And when they met in 2023, Alabama was not the better team, but Nick Saban still found a way to beat Kirby Smart that day. So for as much as Kirby Smart has done, and I think is going to do going forward, I don't personally know if there's anything he's ever going to be able to do to surpass Nick Saban. That includes winning an unfathomable like eighth national championship because of the fact that Nick Saban did finish 5-1 against Kirby Smart.
So here's what I want to know from you. And that's, what is it that separates him that has allowed him to have this tremendous success in what is realistically a short period of time? What is it that separates him?
I think his steadfast commitment to acquiring the most amount of talent. He's made no bones about this. He has never been someone to hype up his own coaching ability. He makes it very clear that he believes winning football games starts and ends rather with acquiring the most amount of talent. And he's done it at a high school level. He's shown, I think, a willingness to go into the transfer portal at certain positions to address some of those needs, to get players who he thinks might fit the Georgia program and the Georgia culture that he has built. Yes, Kirby Smart's one of the best defensive minds. He's done a very good job, in my opinion, of hiring offensive coordinators that produce, winning plays and winning elements, whether that be, obviously Todd Monken, but also he's gotten a lot of success out of guys like Jim Chaney and Mike Bobo, who haven't been as successful elsewhere. So obviously he has an eye for assistance and an eye for talent. And as much as he does, he probably sometimes doesn't get enough credit for how good of a coach he actually is. But part of that is also because he believes in the fact that just talent wins out over coaching. I had the famous quote after the Florida game, as great of a coach as you can be, if you don't have the players around you, it's not going to make all that much of a difference.
Well, I think it's evident that he is the clear number one here. Let's look at some of the guys that I consider to come in runner-ups, starting strong out here with Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, Lincoln's an interesting guy. Obviously, I think the past two seasons at USC have exposed maybe a little bit of the crack in the way that he does things. For a while, I think he was maybe seen as an alternative to Kirby Smart, with Lincoln being an offense first guy and Kirby being a defense first guy. But while Kirby has been able to figure out the offensive side of the ball, Georgia's averaged over 40 points per game in each of the last two seasons. USC has really struggled in that regard under Lincoln Riley. And that defensively was an issue for him at Oklahoma as well. They do finally make a change of defensive coordinator this year, moving on from Alex Grinch, and now DeAnthony Lynn is their new defensive coordinator there out in Los Angeles. And so if Lincoln Riley is going to take that next step, one, he needs to start recruiting better as well. At USC, some people thought that he was going to continue to bring in elite players year after year. That hasn't exactly been the case. They're not recruiting at a top five level like I think USC potentially could. And so I think Lincoln Riley this season has sort of recognized that. I think the 2023 season was maybe similar in some ways to what Kirby's 2020 season rather was. And so he is now attempting to do a reset. I think it's going to take a little bit longer for Lincoln and USC to get there because of the fact that he was so transfer portal reliant early on in his career, along with the fact that they are now transitioning into what I think is a better, league at the top in the Big Ten when you have an Ohio State, a Michigan, along with the fact that Oregon and Washington are coming over from the Pac-12.
Well, if there's one thing that I can say about Lincoln Riley, I don't know about how much he's going to be able to develop programs from here on out, but he does develop players really well, especially quarterbacks. So we're going to keep him in this category. Let's move on to the next one. Like you said, one of the only other coaches in college football that has won a national championship, and that is Mr. God's name, image, and likeness himself, Mr. Dabo Sweeney. You take a look at his resume here. Connor, you said it earlier, had tremendous success, but are his best days really behind him, or is there potentially a comeback story here for Dabo?
This 2024 season is going to be really interesting. They open the year against Georgia, and Dabo, who some say invented the dab, it has shown maybe a little bit of an unwillingness to adapt to the way that college football is changing. As of this time of airing, Clemson has not taken a player out of the transfer portal in this cycle. They are not necessarily as aggressive in terms of NIL and offering sort of packages to players there. They very much believe in the culture that they have established at Clemson. And for a long time, that was really successful. They won two national championships, beating Alabama both times in those games. And so I think with Dabo, again, he's shown maybe some willingness to adapt and make changes. They obviously bring in Garrett Riley, brother of Lincoln Riley, to be the offensive coordinator before the 2023 season. They've still recruited pretty well on the defensive line. So in some aspects, they've done well. And they did end the season on a 5-game winning streak. However, they also lost 4 times last season. And when you open up against a Georgia, you see Florida State making the ascension that they made. There are reasons to be worried, I think, about where Clemson is going forward in comparison to where they were previously. Now, the fact that they're in the ACC, a weaker league, might help them get into the playoff as that expands to 12 teams. But Dabo's got to show that if Clemson's going to get back to where it was, which was at the height of the sport right there next to Alabama in the late 2010s, he's got to show that, you know, they're willing to make changes and willing to, I think, somewhat adapt while still keeping what makes Clemson Clemson to move into this next era of college football.
In Clemson's prime, Dabo was a coach that was beloved by not just his fan base, but a lot of people around college football, but especially the Clemson fan base. However, considering how things went last year, you saw a lot of resentment towards him from the fan base. When Georgia and Clemson face off in week one this season, how much pressure is there going to be on Dabo to at least compete with the Georgia Bulldogs?
Quite a bit, because I think if you go back to that 2021 Georgia game against Clemson, it's the moment that things really changed for both programs. DJ Uiagalelei was very hyped up going into that game, seen as the guy who would continue the line of succession from Trevor Lawrence to from Deshaun Watson to Trevor Lawrence, and there are other great Clemson quarterbacks sprinkled in there. But Clemson scored 3 points that day, and that was sort of really the start of Clemson's little dip here. And so, look, they're going to be an underdog in that game, probably a double-digit underdog. When they face Georgia on August 31st, I think it's a fascinating game from both sides, because if you're Georgia, obviously you have a very tough SEC schedule this year, but Clemson's not going to be a pushover either. They have very talented players. Peter Woods comes to mind. They're bringing in two really talented freshman wide receivers. My question with that Georgia-Clemson game, it's not so much can Clemson win it, but is Clemson able to still go toe-to-toe with a juggernaut like Georgia? And that game was close when they met in 2021. I think there's a chance that if this game gets ugly, the way that we talk about Dabo, which a lot of people have already jumped on, changes even further moving forward.
Do you have an early score prediction for Georgia versus Clemson?
If I had to guess right now, I would probably say 34-17 is what comes to mind. I could see that maybe being a little bit closer. You know, Georgia might play their cards a little close to the chest. Go ahead and write it down.
I am writing it down. I mean, why else would I have my paper and my pen out?
I think Georgia's going to win that game. I just think they're a little more talented right now than Georgia, than Clemson is. And I think you've seen in the past, specifically that Oregon game in 2022, they know they can make a statement to open the season in Atlanta. I fully expect them to go out there and do that.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and move on to the next coach, as long as Connor promises to never do the dab on this show ever again. Do I have your word? Okay, now that you got it out of the way, can we go ahead and move on and swear to me that I never have to watch you do that again?
I can't make that promise.
Okay, well, we're going to move on anyway. Let's go to Lane Kiffin. So, I mean, from a resume standpoint, Lane Kiffin doesn't match up with the rest of these guys, in my opinion. However, I view Lane Kiffin as sort of this new age, new era coach. He almost reminds me of the Mike McDaniel of college football, in the way that he's so outspoken and in tune with pop culture. And I feel like he's a guy that a lot of recruits want to play for now because he is really relatable. Do you get that same feeling?
Lane Kiffin, fellow Swifty. I think it's with Lane, you know, he does a lot of forward-thinking things, and he's done a good job of elevating that Ole Miss program, getting them to two New Year's Six Bowls in recent years. I think having them as a team that many see as a dark horse for the college football playoff this year. But from my perspective, he never beat Nick Saban, and a lot of those games weren't all that close. And you saw this year when he came to Athens, Kirby Smart and Georgia just beat the living tar out of that Ole Miss team. I think for Lane to take that next step, he's done a great job elevating that Ole Miss program. It wouldn't surprise me, let's say things go as poorly for Florida as we think they will this season, it wouldn't surprise me if he's a name to watch for maybe the Florida job next year. For Lane, for him to take that next step and maybe get into that next year as a great head coach, he's got to start winning some of those big games more often. They beat LSU a season ago. Can they maybe get a Georgia this year? Can they go beat Oklahoma and Brent Venables? Their schedule is very easy compared to, you know, what, say, a Georgia has to play, what, say, a Florida has to play. If you're Lane Kiffin, that game against Georgia on November 9th is huge for you, because they're coming to Oxford, and you have not shown the ability, in my mind, to beat the super elite programs. And so that's going to be a major opportunity for Lane, I think, to change the way that some people in the media view him.
When thinking about Lane Kiffin, it all comes down to me for this. It's no secret that he's had several good seasons with Ole Miss. They're teetering at the top of the SEC West, but he's never had a great season, never been able to lead them to a conference championship. And my question to you, Connor, is how much longer can Ole Miss be satisfied with what Lane is currently giving him? Do you see a point where it just continues to be good and he can't leap over to that hump to great? How long will Ole Miss stand for this before maybe they realize that we've got to bring somebody else in?
The question I think Ole Miss has to remember to ask itself is remember who you are. Ole Miss is never going to be an Alabama. They're never going to be a Georgia. And with Texas and Oklahoma coming in, they're never going to live in that tier. And so be very careful with this idea that you think you can do better than the guy that you currently have. Because, you know, Lane Kiffin has done a lot of good things for them. And you know, you don't have to go that far back. Think about Matt Luke, maybe even the way things ended for Hugh Freeze there at the end of his time there. I know Lane Kiffin is maybe not necessarily seen as a championship head coach, but the fact that he's gotten Ole Miss winning 10 games on a somewhat regular basis without, you know, recruiting at a super elite level like Hugh Freeze did in the middle of the 2010s, I think Lane has them in a good place. And the question moving forward, if you're Ole Miss, isn't necessarily can we do better than Lane? It's how do we sustain what Lane Kiffin has already built, whether Lane is here moving forward or not?
Connor, is Ole Miss a stepping stone for Lane, or is that his destination?
I think that's a fair question for Lane. And, you know, obviously part of it comes into what jobs come open. I think if the Florida job, as I mentioned earlier, comes open and it offers it to him, it would make a lot of sense. He's previously coached in the state of Florida. Atlantic has a lot of ties to the South. And Florida, for as much of a dumpster fire as it has been at times over the last 10, 12 years, is still, in my mind, a better job than Ole Miss, even with the fact that they're going to have to play Georgia every year moving forward. So I think it depends, you know, how comfortable is Lane there. There are some restrictions in terms of, you know, the types of contracts that he's able to get because of state laws in Mississippi. But Lane's done very well at Ole Miss. I think both sides have benefited from this hiring, which certainly raised a lot of eyebrows when he left Florida Atlantic and was brought into the SEC. I think Lane has done very well there, certainly exceeded some people's expectations. And if Lane wants to continue to be the head coach at Ole Miss, I think they'd be smart to keep him there. The question is, if a big-time job, like, say, Florida were to come open, or maybe Florida State, do they make a big swing there and try and bring in Lane Kiffin?
All right, last thing before we move on to Brandon Adams' best friend. Lane Kiffin, where does he rank among the SEC head coaches?
I think you have to have him below Kirby, obviously. I think, and you might not like this, clean Kalen DeBoer, I think is ahead of him just based on the fact that he's gotten to a college football playoff, that he's beaten a Texas and gotten there. Mm-hmm. I think I would put Steve Sarkisian ahead of him because he has gotten Texas to a playoff. It'll be very interesting to see how Sarkisian adapts to the SEC this year. Ryan Day, I think you have to have ahead of him, even though, you know, I have a lot of questions about Day. I think the fact that he's still gotten Ohio State to where they have been in recent years is impressive enough. And so, you know, among SEC head coaches, you know, obviously not in the top tier, that's Kirby by himself, probably at the bottom of that second tier, top of that third tier with a Brian Kelly, with what he's done at Notre Dame and LSU. I think right in that sort of wheelhouse right there.
All right, speaking of Ryan Day, let's go ahead and move on to the man himself. Here we go. Head coach of Ohio State, Ryan Day. You see his resume here, 2 conference titles, 3 playoff appearances, still hasn't been able to beat Michigan in the last 3 years. Connor, with Jim Harbaugh out of the picture, is Ryan Day the clear number one front runner head coach for their conference?
Yes, based just on what we've seen so far. And I think the fact that DeBoer leaving and Dan Lanning still being a young head coach matters there. If you're Ryan Day, you know, yes, you got to go play at Oregon this year and you've got a talented team and you do have some questions. Will Howard, a quarterback. If you're Ryan Day, you can't lose that game to Michigan at the end of the year. It's in Columbus this year. You can't, as an Ohio State coach, lose 4 straight. You know, if Ryan Day hadn't dominated the Big Ten in the way that he has, I'm not sure what the appetite would be for him having lost 3 straight. But again, you know, he's gotten to a national championship game, beat Trevor Lawrence when he was at Clemson there. Came very close to beating Kirby Smart in that 2022 Georgia team that went on to win the national championship. And they are, you know, to their credit, I think trying to adjust and change on the fly. Again, you think back to how bad that defense was in 2022 to the strides that they made last season. I know they're playing in the Big Ten, which doesn't have great offenses, but they are a better defensive team moving forward. I think the big thing this year, look, they spent big in NIL. They go out, they land Caleb Downs. They retain a lot of their talent and keep them from moving on to the NFL draft. How much are they able to get out of Will Howard, or what that quarterback position looks like, is going to ultimately fall on Ryan Day. I know they bring in Chip Kelly as a big move to be the new offensive coordinator there, but this is a massive season for Ryan Day, and I'd make the argument that no coach, certainly in the top tier, is under more pressure this season than Ryan Day himself. Not just to, you know, get to a college football playoff and win multiple games with the talent they have, but specifically they have to beat Michigan. Otherwise, unless they get in and win a national championship, I'm not sure that anything he does this season is going to be satisfactory to that fan base.
I mean, Ryan Day was essentially handed the keys to a kingdom that is traditionally successful. It wasn't like it was some dumpster fire at Ohio State when Ryan Day came in. Do you think it's actually hard to judge how good of a coach he is just based on the conditions that he came in to the program with?
I don't think so anymore, because he's shown an ability to sustain it to some regard. Obviously, the losses to Michigan are concerning in that front. But also, you know, again, Michigan has gotten a lot better as well. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that fact. Ohio State is still one of the more talented teams in the country. They've done, in my mind, a good job of keeping it to where it was at the end of the Urban Meyer era in terms of talent, in terms of being near the top of the sport. And so in that regard, he does deserve some credit. I think as he gets more experienced as a head coach, I believe this is either his fifth or sixth season that he's entering as a full-time head coach, he's putting more and more of his stamp on this team and on this program. And again, you know, for Kirby Smart, as much as we talk about him and have anointed him now, it wasn't until his sixth season as a head coach that he won his first national championship. So these kind of things do take time. Well, I think Ohio State was in a better place when Ryan Day took over compared to where Georgia was when Kirby Smart took over. There are some similarities there between the two programs. And I'd point out as well, you know, people were not very happy with Kirby Smart at the end of the 2019 season and even during the 2020 season when they lost to Alabama and Florida. So we've seen before how quickly these things can change. And I think Ryan Day has a case this year to change the narrative about him very quickly. But he better do it with the talent that they have on this Ohio State team, because there are no excuses anymore.
Yeah, they've got all the money in the world to buy whatever talent they want. I think the one thing that you said that I agree with the most is the fact that out of every guy on this list, he is definitely the one that has the most pressure on him, especially with Harbaugh being gone. There's absolutely no excuse anymore. But we're going to go ahead and move on to our last coach of the night. I wish I could like fake a Cajun accent, but I cannot. Here's Brian Kelly. 20 years as a head coach. I mean, he's a vet as vet gets. 3 conference titles, 3 playoff appearances, 0 national titles. All right, Brian Kelly, he's a vet. Where does he fit into the SEC? Hasn't been here very long. Had tremendous success in his first year. Star quarterback Jaden Daniels got hurt this past season. Where does he fall in line, Connor?
You know, again, I probably have Sarkisian ahead of him because of the fact that he got Texas to the playoff, although Kelly has gotten Notre Dame to the college football playoff multiple times there as well. So Kelly is clearly an accomplished coach, you know, winning 20 games through his first 2 seasons at LSU, winning the SEC once. I would say if you take a step back and look at the things in the totality, he is on schedule there. But I think LSU was a massive opportunity this year. I know they have to replace some key players on that offense, Heisman Trophy winner Jaden Daniels. They have a lot of talent there. And so if they're able to fix things defensively while keeping things rolling on the offensive side of the ball, it wouldn't surprise me if LSU is a team that Georgia plays in the SEC championship game. But look, I think it's fair to point out there were a lot of rumors last year that Kelly would have been interested in taking the Michigan job when it came open. So it's always going to be an interesting fit, I think, until he wins a national championship there. And look, I'll say it. While I think Brian Kelly is a better coach than most people do, Brian Kelly is not exactly liked or beloved by many people out there. He hasn't exactly endeared himself to a lot of people outside of his family. So I think with Brian Kelly, you know, sort of being an outsider, obviously Northeastern ties, former Notre Dame head coach at LSU, there's always going to sort of be a weird fit there. And if, you know, first year without Alabama and Nick Saban being there, there is some pressure on Brian Kelly to go out and maybe establish LSU and say, hey, you know, with Alabama gone, we can now be sort of that big team in what was formerly the SEC West as Texas and Oklahoma join the league.
So to wrap up here, the coaches that I gave you, Lincoln Riley, Dabo, Lane Kiffin, Ryan Day, Brian Kelly, I want you to rank them in order from second best to bottom of the totem pole.
So Lane Kiffin last. Then we have Lincoln Riley. Then we have Ryan Day. Then we have Brian Kelly, because he has gotten to a national championship. He's gotten to multiple playoffs. And then I will take Dabo Swinney, but I don't feel great about Dabo Swinney moving forward. And I wouldn't be surprised if moving forward, this list changed greatly because of the way that Clemson as a program is trending.
All right. So if Kirby's a 10, what is Dabo on the scale of 1 to 10?
What makes Dabo so tricky is, you know, how much do you factor in past performance versus moving forward? I'll say if Kirby's a 10, Dabo's an 8.
Okay.
Again, he does have 2 national championships, but I have, like many do, a lot of concerns about, you know, just his rigidness in this sport moving forward.
All right. Well, that will wrap up our separation between Kirby Smart and the next best coaches. I think the conclusion of this argument is that these guys have a long way to go. Now let's go ahead and move on to our spring position preview. We're going to be talking about the defensive line today. Talked about the O-line last week. Defensive line this past season was a real concern for Georgia as the games went on. I really think that Auburn game sparked a lot of controversy for the defensive line. But this year the tables have turned because you bring back Nazir Stackhouse, Warren Brinson, Mikel Williams. Connor, if you had to give this position a grade, just based off the names that you see, what would you grade them?
I would give it a B. And I think if Georgia's going to win a national championship by the end of the season, it's going to have to be an A. Moving Mikel Williams to that Jack, more of a natural edge rusher position, I think is going to be big for unlocking him and what he's going to be able to do. Getting back Warren Brinson and Nazir Stackhouse, in my mind, 2 NFL-capable defensive linemen, I think is significant. But it's actually the names that we didn't necessarily see on that list that I think Georgia needs to make a big jump moving forward. Mm-hmm. We know what Nazir Stackhouse and Warren Brinson are at this point. It's their 5th year in the program. They've played a lot of snaps. I don't know how much room for growth there is between the two of them there. It's guys like Christian Miller, who's entering his 3rd year in the program. Jordan Hall, a former 5-star prospect. Tyrion Ingram Dawkins, I would include there as well, though obviously he's a potential starter, and I think he's someone who could benefit a lot from Mikel Williams' move. Tyrion Ingram Dawkins needs to stay healthy this year. And if him, Christian Miller, and Jordan Hall make big leaps and give Georgia, I think, something similar to a 2021 defensive line, I think that's maybe how you go about getting this position group to an A. And so, yes, Mikel Williams could be a very productive player for Georgia on the edge. You saw that in the game against Florida State where they used him differently than they had been in years past. But if this Georgia defensive line is going to reach its ceiling, which I don't think as high as the 2021 team is, but I think there's a lot of talent in that room, it's going to need guys like Christian Miller and Jordan Hall to take big steps forward.
Yeah, Mikel Williams was a guy who had a lot of hype around him as a freshman. I didn't feel like we saw the best of Mikel this past season until the very end, but he's going to have to be that captain of the defensive line this year. What would you like to see out of Mikel?
Yeah, I think the big thing is just playing him in a spot that is more natural for him. I think anyone that followed his recruitment and sort of understands this Georgia defense knows he's always playing a little bit out of position. He's just a more natural 4-3 defensive end. And they were sort of using him in a 3-4 defensive end, you know, 5 technique type of role. And it's not a coincidence in my mind that you saw him play a little bit more out on that edge as a true, you know, 7 or 9 technique. And you saw him in that game against Florida State really become a more disruptive force. And Georgia, I think, has also maybe got to be willing to let him pin his ears back and attack the quarterback more. Obviously, they want to have disciplined rush lanes. But Georgia has not been a very big sack-heavy team. And you know, with the change in defensive coordinator from Dan Lanning to Glenn Schumann, one of the things I think we've seen now is that they're just not as aggressive defensively as they were under Dan Lanning, as they are under Glenn Schumann. And so I wonder if you're moving him into sort of that Jack position, which is sort of a hybrid outside linebacker defensive end spot, is that maybe how you best go about unleashing Mikel Williams? Because from a raw talent standpoint, he is as talented as anyone out there on this Georgia team, led Georgia in sacks as a freshman. How do you go about getting the best out of Mikel Williams is a very important question that I think Glenn Schumann is going to have to ultimately answer if this Georgia defensive line is to reach its ceiling.
So we showed the projected starters on that first slide, but we have another one with some of the guys that could end up rotating in. Like you mentioned, guys like Jordan Big Baby Hall, Christian Miller, Jamal Jarrett, and then the transfer from South Carolina. Who is the most interesting name on this list to you?
I think for me, it's Christian Miller. He's a guy that made some flash plays at the end of last season. Georgia Tech, Alabama ultimately missed that game against Florida State in the Orange Bowl. But a guy who, entering his third year in the program, is a little bit more experienced than, say, someone like Jordan Hall or Xavier McLeod. I think he's a guy that can be a disruptive player in the middle of that defensive line, give them something a little bit different. And so for me, I think that's the guy who this spring and really this whole offseason, I'm interested in seeing, okay, what kind of strides does he make as a player? I'm not saying he's ultimately going to be the next version of Jalen Carter. I don't believe there is someone of that caliber on this defensive line. But if Christian Miller can make strides and emerge as a disruptive player and help also, I think, spell guys like Warren Brinson and Nas Stackhouse, I think that's going to go a long way in this Georgia defensive line ultimately reaching their ceiling.
And we had a lot of people return to the defensive line from last season, but what's going to make the 2024 defensive line drastically different?
For me, it's those young guys in that middle tier realizing their potential. You throw Gabe Harris on there. He's a guy that bounced between outside linebacker and defensive end. I think if he finds a home there at defensive end, that's a good thing for Georgia. You know, Jamal Jarrett, year two, he was hyped as a Jordan Davis type player. Does he make strides to do that? Because we didn't see him do that in year one. They also signed quite a bit of talent in the 2024 recruiting cycle. What is someone like Joseph Jonah Ajanye or a Jordan Thomas able to give you as a freshman? You know, they're obviously not going to be starters, but what are they able to give you in terms of depth so that you're not as reliant on someone like Nas Stackhouse or Warren Brinson on a down-by-down basis? Again, I think one of the more telling stats with last year's defensive line. Through 12 games, so this was going into the Alabama game, Nazir Stackhouse had played more snaps in 12 games than Jordan Davis had in 15 games. And with what we've seen with this Georgia defensive line over the years, the deeper it is, the better it just happens to be because you're able to rotate more. And so if Georgia's able to develop quality depth behind those guys at the top, I think that's going to go a long way in this group reaching its ceiling.
And with that, that'll wrap up our spring position preview defensive line. And now it is the moment that everyone has been waiting on. It has been so difficult to keep this a surprise. But tonight, Connor and I are going to do something that has never been done on the pages of Dog Nation. At least I don't think so. It is time for the first ever Dog Nation Oscar Awards.
Welcome to the most fabulous night of the year. It's time for Kaylee and Connor's Dog Nation Oscar.
Oh yeah? How you like my Oscars wave?
That picture of me, the eyes.
I didn't pick the picture.
I look like Robin Oppenheimer has just realized the consequences of his actions and is just, you know, set off a chain event that will destroy the world.
Well, in case you guys didn't pick up on it, this is the Dog Nation Oscars hosted by myself and Connor, who are coincidentally probably the only two people on the Dog Nation staff who actually care or will watch the Oscars. So who better to do it than us?
Of course. It's going to be a big weekend for cinema. I have seen a lot of the movies that are nominated. Big weekend, excited for it. And thought, why not add a little bit of cinema into the way we discuss the Georgia football program?
I mean, and in case you guys didn't put it together, this is why Connor is wearing his suit and I'm wearing a dress, which is extremely uncomfortable, but I will do anything for the Dog Nation audience because we're going all out for the Dog Nation Oscars tonight, and we're so excited that you get to be a part of it. There are going to be 7 categories. The nominations were made by Connor, and then we had our own Dog Nation Academy vote on these. Connor does not know who the winners are, so he's going to learn at the same time that you guys do, and I'm just absolutely so stoked. So let's get into our first category of the night. Connor, I would love for you to read the nominees for the best newcomer.
Yeah, best newcomer, someone who is in their first year with the program. We have linebacker CJ Allen, kicker Peyton Woodring, wide receiver Dominic Lovett, wide receiver Ra-Ra Thomas, and offensive coordinator Mike Bobo.
And Connor, I have to say that this one was almost unanimous. All but one voted for this person, and I don't think that there is any other participant that should earn the award for Best Newcomer. So the Oscar for Best Newcomer tonight goes to...
Wow, CJ Allen. I'm really surprised by that. I thought, you know, look, Jeff ran a great campaign for Peyton Woodring, hyping him up as like the next Justin Tucker, which he is not, but I think CJ Allen, you saw the impact that he had coming in as a freshman, starting for Jamon Dumas Johnson when he got injured down the stretch. And you hear the way teammates talk about CJ Allen. I think this is a guy that is going to play, obviously, a very big role for Georgia in 2024, but is going to emerge as one of the key leaders in this program moving forward.
I just can't even imagine the pressure of what it must feel like to come in as a true freshman and have to play one of the most important positions on the field, to sub in and pinch hit for a guy who is very well known. And just for him to come in and be able to do that and still keep his composure and play like he's been out there for years, I mean, I don't think that there could have been any other person for best newcomer tonight. And with that, we will move on to our next category of the night, which is best player in a supporting role, so a non-skill position. Our nominees tonight are Cedric Von Prawn Granger, Brett Thorson, Peyton Woodring, Tate Ratledge, and Mykel Williams. Connor, do you have any predictions before we announce the winner?
I think much like Robert Downey Jr. is going to run away with this award for supporting actor with his role in Oppenheimer, I think Cedric Von Prawn Granger is a slam dunk for this award, just given what he has meant to the Georgia football program over the years.
I have to say that this vote was a lot closer than I thought it would be, so let's go ahead and kill the suspense. The winner tonight for player in a supporting role is, of course, it's got to be SVP. I mean, he is the epitome of what a DGD is. Three-year starter. He was the captain of that offensive line. I mean, just the leadership skills, the personality, the physical talent, it's all there, and I couldn't have imagined it going to anyone else.
Yeah, 44 career starts, two-time captain, two-time starter on a national championship team, you know, helped, I think, with the transition from Stetson Bennett to Carson Beck in a way that maybe not be fully appreciated. And while, you know, Cedric has talked about how there are more athletic guys out there, there are better, you know, technically sound centers, I think from a leadership standpoint, there's a very, very small list of Georgia players that have ever come through this program that are as capable leaders of men than Cedric Von Prawn Granger. Supporting role, he did more than enough to support this Georgia program in his time here in Athens.
And I think the amount of respect that other players gave him, it was quite evident, as you could see him being not just the captain of the O-line, but a regular captain on the field. And seeing him speak at the combine, he's so captivating, and I could understand why the players would have his respect and want to listen to a guy like him. I think that this is only the beginning for SVP, so we will give him the Dog Nation Oscar for best player in a supporting role. And now on to our next category. This is going to be best moment. And Connor, I would love for you to read the nominees if you can see them.
Yeah, so we have Georgia seniors hitting the 50 win mark with their win over Florida State. Georgia breaking the SEC record for consecutive wins, which was 29. Kirby Smart sets the SEC record for most wins through his first 100 games. Brock Bowers returns to play just 26 days after tightrope surgery for Georgia's win over Ole Miss. And the Bulldogs have the biggest victory in bowl game history, beating Florida State by 60 points, breaking the record previously held by Georgia when they beat TCU by 58 points in the national championship game.
I mean, Connor, I think that this category is absolutely stacked. So many landmarks hit this season. The fact that the UGA resume has all of these to pick from speaks volumes on just how special the 2023 season was.
Yeah, much like adapted screenplay in this year's Oscars, it is really a loaded category, and I don't think that there is necessarily a wrong answer. But in my heart of hearts, I do believe there is a most right answer, and I will be interested in seeing if the Academy, in both instances, makes the correct decision.
Well, let's go ahead and find out if that is the right answer, and the Dog Nation Oscar for best moment goes to UGA breaks the record for most consecutive wins within the SEC. Connor, is that the one that you had in mind?
No, the Academy got this one wrong. I'm not surprised here. I look, as someone who covered this team on a day-in, day-out basis, the period of time where Brock Bowers was injured was, you know, every sort of day you had to ask about Brock or find some sort of new angle to talk about Brock Bowers and that ankle. And when he comes back against Ole Miss, just the electricity in that stadium that day, him catching a touchdown pass in that game, in the pouring rain. It was a big BLW weekend, brown liquor weather. For me, as someone who covered the team on a day-to-day basis, you know, the 29 wins in a row are nice, but a lot of that, I think, had stemmed from previous Georgia teams. I think the biggest wins in that streak occurred during the 2021 national championship game and then obviously during the 2022 season. from my opinion, I would say that the Brock Bowers return was the biggest moment of the Georgia football season.
So typically when someone wins an Oscar, they come up and they thank their agent and they thank the other nominees, and you didn't thank anybody. You're supposed to discuss how important the win is and how revolutionary it is, because how long is it going to be before another SEC program can top this? This is a historical moment for the UGA season. So, Connor, I would like for you to say something nice about it before we move on to the next one.
Look, it's an incredible achievement that ultimately came to an end in Georgia's loss to Alabama. And so maybe that is perhaps why I do not see this winning streak as the great achievement that my colleagues in the Academy certainly do.
Yeah, I was going to say that is why we have the Academy and not just let you vote on it, Connor. All right, moving on. It is going to be Best Game of the Year. And Best Game nominees are Georgia versus Florida State in the largest bowl game win of all time, UGA versus Missouri, the game that I was coincidentally most nervous for this year, UGA's comeback win over Auburn at Auburn, and then we've got Georgia versus Florida, and then UGA versus Ole Miss. This was, I believe, everybody but one person, and that one person was me, selected the same answer for this. So let's go ahead and give the Oscar for the best game of the year. It's going to be UGA's absolutely dominant win versus Ole Miss. I mean, I feel like UGA was already making a name for themselves. They already had this reputation at the top of the list, top of the AP poll, but this was that clear separation. I knew a lot of people thought if there was going to be one team that could defeat Georgia in the regular season, it was going to be Ole Miss. Well, joke's on them, because this game was an absolute joke for Ole Miss.
Yeah, it was a crummy weather day. You're always sort of interested in seeing what type of atmosphere it was going to be. Night game in Sanford Stadium. We just touched on Brock Bowers' return. And from the jump, they just go out there and beat the stuffing out of Ole Miss. And, you know, look, Georgia played a lot of big games, a lot of big home games. Obviously, the Tennessee game in 2022 was an all-time day. But for someone who was in the stadium for that Ole Miss game, that was just a really cool, special environment. It was senior day, a great way to send off so many of these guys who played a big role in those two national championship wins. And so while, you know, UGA and Missouri was a closer game, obviously Georgia-Auburn was a heart stopper at times, I think just the totality of what happened against Ole Miss is why that moment deserves to be recognized as the game of the year for the Georgia Bulldogs.
Now, you did vote for this game, so I have to ask, when you, the voting decision that you made, was it more so based on the opponent or based on the score of the game?
Just the vibe. I'm a big vibes guy, and just the vibe that came out of that game. Look, Georgia Ole Miss was a top 10 matchup, and there were some people out there that were probably picking Ole Miss going into that day, and just the vibes at the end of that game in the fourth quarter when Brock catches that touchdown pass. Vibes could not have been better for a wet, rainy, cold November day. And it speaks to what the Georgia football program is, to where they just dominated and had a fantastic time.
So UGA versus Ole Miss, the winner of the night for best game of the year on behalf of the vibes.
Yeah, okay. Good vibes.
The vibes. All right, we're going to move on to our next category. And this is going to be defensive player in a leading role. So skill players here. I really thought that this category could be wide open. Connor, why don't you read the nominees for us?
Yes, we've got safety Malachi Starks, star Tyke Smith, safety Javon Board, inside linebacker Smile Munden, and cornerback Kamari Lassiter.
And the Oscar for defensive player in a leading role goes to... Oh, yeah, you guessed it. It's Malachi Starks, probably going to go down as one of the best safeties in all-time Georgia history. Connor, how crazy is it to think that we have him for another year?
Yeah, he's going to be one of the best players in college football this year. I think he's the best defensive player in college football coming back. It's been very strange to see people talk about Caleb Downs being a better safety than Malachi Starks, just given what we've seen Starks do in his time at Georgia. You could have gone with a lot, much like the best actress category in this year's Oscars. I think you could have gone a lot of different ways with the award. You know, Kamari Lassiter could be seen as the Emma Stone type for Poor Things, but I think just what Starks does for Georgia, much like Lily Gladstone in Killers of the Flower Moon, just really ties the entire defense together. You know, Georgia has always had great safety play under Kirby Smart, but I feel like that has been elevated under Starks in terms of what he does, both as an enforcer and as an eraser in the back end. Just a complete performance from the Georgia safety year in, year out.
I feel like if we had hosted this the year prior and then have another one after this, Malachi Starks is that rare kind of player that could go 3 for 3 in this category in his time at Georgia.
Yeah, he's kind of like Meryl Streep in that regard, and that he's just going to rack up nominations simply by shooting up. I don't think he would have beaten out Jalen Carter a season ago, but certainly worthy of being nominated.
And we're going to move on to offensive player in a leading role. This one was close. This was the closest vote of all. I think some people would be shocked if they saw the Academy's vote. So here are the nominees for offensive player in a leading role. You've got the quarterback, the head honcho, Carson Beck, Brock Bowers, who Connor considers to be the greatest Georgia football of all time, thus bringing shame and dishonor to his family, Kendall Milton, Dejon Edwards, who I imagine Connor is probably surprised made it on the list considering I do have that North Georgia bias, and it wraps up here with Ladd McConkey. Connor, do you have anything you'd like to say before we read the winner of offensive player in a leading role?
Yeah, if Brock Bowers doesn't win this award, I'm leaving the show.
That's fine. I've got somebody on speed dial who can handle the rest of the awards. Are we going to have like a Will Smith, Chris Rock moment here?
If the right guy wins the award, I think we're okay.
All right. Well, there's only one way to know. Let's go ahead and find out who our winner is for offensive player in a leading role. I just don't think it could have been anyone else, even though this one was very, very, very close. I mean, he's the great. There's no other person that could have won this award, and it would feel right. Since I had authority over the Google form, I have to say, if things would have been different, I may have had to do some switching things around, maybe submit my vote twice, because it has to be Brock Bowers.
Look, you know, I guess there were some people out there that voted Carson back in part because Brock missed a couple games, but I don't know how you could tell the story of the 2023 Georgia football team without Brock Bowers, what he did against Auburn, what he did, you know, coming back from the injury, scoring touchdowns against Ole Miss in Tennessee. Look, I've established, I think he's the greatest player to ever play for the University of Georgia. And much like Cillian Murphy running away with the best actor nomination or Christopher Nolan winning for Oppenheimer for best director, I just think with Brock, with what he's done, look, you could have given it. I honestly believe you probably could have given him this award in each of the last three seasons, and he would have been deserving, much like, you know, Christopher Nolan for Interstellar or maybe his work on Dunkirk. I think Brock Bowers is an all-timer. And as we sometimes see with the Academy, they don't always get it right. But in what was his final season in Athens, I think Brock Bowers is more than deserving of winning the Best Actor Award on offense.
If Georgia players are Oscar nominees, is Brock Bowers the Oppenheimer, the clear front runner, the one that's been nominated for almost everything and seems like the sure thing? Is he the Oppenheimer of this Georgia football team?
In my opinion, yes. However, based on the way the Academy voted, I don't think they necessarily see Brock in the same manner I think that the voters are going to see Oppenheimer on Sunday.
And now we're going to go to we've got a special award, but this is going to wrap up all of our Georgia football awards for the night. And this is the best individual play. This is like best picture. In my mind, this is the superior award and the one that you want to win tonight. Connor, would you please do me the honor of reading the nominees?
Yes, we have Nazir Stackhouse 44-yard interception return in the win over Missouri. You have Dylan Bell's 18-yard touchdown pass to Marcus Rosemy Jack Saint against Tennessee. You have Ladd McConkey weaving his way through the Florida State defense in the 63-3 win in the Orange Bowl. You have Brock Bowers' 40-yard go-ahead touchdown in the win over against Auburn. And wrapping things up, you have Makai Muse, his 69-yard punt return touchdown against Ball State.
I mean, this category is so diverse, and not just because of the players, but because of the different types of plays that they are. There were so many tremendous plays this season. It was hard to narrow it down to just five. Do you think that I got the five right, Connor? Is there anything else you would have added to this list?
You know, I think the Makai Muse touchdown, it does not measure up to the quality of the first four on there, but I think you could maybe mention Ladd McConkey's touchdown against Ole Miss where he made down a couple of times. But does Ladd McConkey really deserve to have two individual play nominees? I'm not necessarily sure about that. So I don't mind giving Makai Muse, who had a strong season for Georgia, a nomination here.
All right. And the Dog Nation Oscar for best individual play. Oh, yeah. It's going to Brock Bowers and his 40-yard touchdown versus Auburn. Perhaps maybe the sole reason that Georgia even defeated Auburn in that game, because once we got into the second half, it seemed like the play call sheet was Mike Bobo said, we're going to get the ball to Brock, and he's going to score it. He may have single-handedly saved Georgia in that game.
Yeah, just a monster performance that day from Brock Bowers. I think we saw Carson Beck really make strides in that game. But I think a big reason why is because he realized, I can just spam the ball to Brock Bowers and Auburn doesn't have anyone to cover him. It was a go-ahead touchdown with less than 2 minutes remaining in a game that was closer than many anticipated. And I think the fact that it was such a close game helped lean Brock in into winning this award. Certainly one of the more memorable games of the year for Georgia. But for him to just, I think that's going to be the game that comes to mind for people when they think Brock Bowers during his time at Georgia, just a dominant showing against Auburn that day. And unfortunately, you know, gets injured against Vanderbilt 2 weeks later, but just an all-time iconic performance from Brock down there on the Plains. And I know Hugh Freeze and the Auburn coaching staff, unlike people who have the opportunity to go back and rewatch Oppenheimer or many of the other fine films from this past year, will be very glad to never see Brock Bowers again play for the University of Georgia.
So that will wrap up our athletic awards for the night. Was there anybody that you felt got snubbed in general? Did we Barbie anybody on the show tonight, Connor?
I don't think we've Barbied anybody. I think maybe you can honor Tate Ratledge, who wasn't on All-American this past season, but I also think Cedric Van Pran was just a better player. Maybe Ernest Green should have gotten a nomination in terms of best newcomer on the offensive line, but he was also a redshirt freshman, so that gets a little iffy there. But overall, I like to think we did a good job. However, if Brock had not taken home the awards that he deserved, I would have very vehemently disagreed with that.
Well, if we would have had an award here for best mullet, I think that Tate Ratledge would have so easily claimed that.
Easily. And not just best mullet on Georgia, best mullet in maybe, quite frankly, all of mullets right now. I don't know if I've seen a better mullet of anyone who is currently sporting a mullet than one Tate Ratledge.
I've heard you make a lot of hot takes on this show, but that one's up there.
I mean, who else has a great mullet right now, though? I mean, Cam Smith, maybe, but we'll see if he has that at the Masters in a few weeks. I think Tate is sort of owning the mullet right now.
He's been owning the mullet. This is nothing new.
Yeah. You know, Taylor Swift reference.
So we do have one more award to give out tonight, and I would like for y'all to think of this as like the Lifetime Achievement Award. This was a unanimous vote, the only one of the entire night, and that is going to be the coolest person born today on March 7th. And the nominees are Melanie Mansell, a.k.a. Mamaw, Bryan Cranston, I mean, a terrific actor who has inspired generations, and Wanda Sykes. If you don't know who Wanda Sykes is, you should go ask your grandparents or go look on Google. But like I said, this was unanimous. I'll let you have some time to sit here and reflect and take a wild guess on who the coolest person born today, March 7th, might be.
Well, I'm guessing it's not Bryan Cranston. So it's between Wanda Sykes of Curb Your Enthusiasm and Mamaw. And we know Mama's a big fan of ours, so I'd be very disappointed if she somehow doesn't win this award.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really dirty of me to put her up here even for this nomination if she lost 8-0. But we're going to find out. And the Oscar for coolest person born on March 7th, a unanimous vote, the only one of the night. It is my Mama, Melanie Mansell. It is her birthday today, and she is a diehard lover of the Dog Nation offseason. And not just because she's obligated to be, because she is my grandmother, but she really enjoys it. And I have to say, she sometimes speaks more highly of Connor than myself. So we wanted to give her an Oscar for tonight. She's my absolute best friend in this entire world and somebody that I look up to more than anything. And I know she's watching right now. So everybody go wish her a happy birthday, Connor.
Very well deserving. Happy 21st birthday, Mama.
Yes, it is her 21st again, I believe. Well, that is our first ever Dog Nation Oscars. Connor, how are you feeling after this?
I'm elated. I'm going to hit the after parties and just go relax after a very stressful campaign season.
Yeah, I cannot wait to get into my normal everyday clothes. It has been an absolute pleasure to host this event tonight with you. I couldn't have imagined doing it with someone else. And who knows, maybe one day somebody will see this and they're like, oh, we need to have them as our next Oscars host. How cool would that be?
No, the last time they had two people host the Oscars together was James Franco and Anne Hathaway.
Oh, and that was terrible. Yeah. Well, I know they tried to bring in the new generation of that, and it didn't so much work out. But, hey, maybe we'll be vets one day, and we'll get to, you know, see it in person. But, Connor, Thank you so much for joining me tonight as my co-host on the Dog Nation Oscars. Dog Nation, thank you for being a part of the Dog Nation Oscars and for always showing up to support the Dog Nation offseason. We can't thank you enough for watching us. Whether you're joining us from Facebook, Instagram, the homepage of dognation.com, or wherever you're joining us from, thank you so much. We always appreciate it, and we'll see you right back here next Thursday, 7 o'clock. Who knows what more surprises we'll have in store for you guys.
Very much looking forward to it.